You're listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, Julie Thompson and Nikolai Joke from Recover Alaska.
And good morning, everyone. This is Nikolai Joke, and I'm an alcoholic in recovery for 2 years. And I do some work with Recover Alaska and the Alliance, which is pretty new. And I began my recovery journey here in Bethel at the Yaganarvik Healing Center. And one of the people that was there, fortunately for me, is my partner in crime this morning. It's Julie.
Happy Wednesday, YK Delta. Nikolai and I had the fortune, and I say that on behalf of myself as much as anybody, to cross paths just over 2 years ago, and it happened to be Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day, yeah.
Yeah. And for me, like, it just is poetry that you showed up on that day, because what I have recognized, not just in my work with recovery, but my parents were both alcoholic, and I've just really recognized that recovery is really about returning to one's own heart. And
yeah.
So, yeah, it just made sense that you showed up on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so I could talk about that day. I was very lost, very hungover, and I could remember weeks later when I was going to check out of treatment, we were talking about the day that I walked in, and you said that, we've got a new staff member. You thought I was working at a Yaganarvik, but, you know, I was checking in, and that was the best decision that I ever made in my life, because up until that point, I was so lost. I was so unhealthy. We could talk about some of the layers of things that I had to peel back while I was in the recovery process. And we're talking about this, by the way, because Recover Alaska, which is an amazing organization with amazing people that I know are listening right now, their big drive is to go through and bring awareness using statistics, using research-based facts to remove the stigma from alcohol misuse and try to promote alcohol misuse prevention and whole family, whole person well-being. And I can't think of a better person to talk with about about this than Julie, who was very pivotal in my recovery process. And we'll talk about some of those processes as the morning progresses. But growing up in this community, in this area, I grew up in Neposkiak, and my first exposure to alcohol was alcohol misuse. We never saw any people that were drinking socially, having a good time, and not becoming belligerent and just messy. That was, unfortunately, my exposure, and I know it's a lot of people's exposure to alcohol. And it's not a pretty picture at all. You know, normal drinkers, I didn't know what a normal drinker was, because you see these commercials on TV, you know, that give this perception that alcohol, you know, makes everything light and fun. And for a lot of people, it does. But unfortunately, for a lot of us who are in the throes of alcohol misuse, for those of us who witness it, it's just not a good picture to see at all. And so, like I said, growing up, and some of the misperceptions that a lot of people have are natives are drunk. You know, it's just a very sad fact. And so, you know, a lot of the homeless population, you see a lot of natives. And so it gives this negative perception that and the stigma around alcohol misuse. And so we're going to talk about some of those statistics this morning that will shed a new light on, they definitely shed a new light for me on the whole issue. And I hope that, you know, you could spread this good news after hearing about it. But one of the other layers that, you know, I had to peel back was, you know, the fact that sexually I was bisexual. And so, you know, that was something that was not common or not upfront in the communities. And so there was a lot of shame interwoven with that. And so I want you to bring up the Brené Brown quote about shame later on, because it's powerful. And so there was all of those different factors. My grandpa was an alcoholic, and so I didn't really understand the disease of alcohol misuse. And so we're going to be talking about some of the terms that we use, mm-hmm. too, because Recover Alaska wants to use terminology that is inclusive rather than terminology that pushes people out, mm-hmm. and, you know, sheds a negative light on them. So we're going to be talking about some of those terminologies and how we use them to change the culture, to change the way that we perceive alcohol and the way that and hopefully make it easier for people to feel that whatever it is that makes them ask for help. Mm-hmm. And because help is here, there's so many resources, and we'll talk about that as well. So so I wanted to talk with Julie about some of the statistics, and we could pull that up right now. And then Recover Alaska, they've got an amazing website, recoveralaska.org, and this is where some of the information that they have that we're reading this morning is posted. So if you want to take a look at it, in their May 2019 report last year, they named it Alcohol Changed the Narrative. A poll in 2018 shows that 60% of Alaska Native respondents are sober. So out of all of the people that they had fill out this survey, 60% of those were sober.
That's great.
And that's higher than the Alaskan average. So it's higher than the average statewide. Mm-hmm. So I wanted that to resonate with people because there's so many of us Natives that are sober, that choose to stay sober.
Yeah.
And when we talk about Alaska's Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, BRFSS, and other data sources, that white people binge drink at higher rates, but Alaska Native people drink at higher rates. They heavy drink at higher rates, excuse me. So that's the fishbowl, you know, the image that you see in the very forefront. And that, coupled with other social determinants of health, means that Alaska Native people experience higher alcohol-induced morbidity. So it's just not a good picture at all. And then the Youth Risk Behavior Survey shows highest prevalence rates of drinking among Alaska Native females, which is really unfortunate. When I saw that, I immediately thought of the attention that's being brought to the missing, murdered Indigenous women of the country.
Mm.
You know, when I saw that figure, it broke my heart because here we have a population of people that are at high risk already for danger, and here they are, you know, showing the highest prevalence of rates of drinking. So, you know, that's something that we need to work together to change. So the BRFSS only asks people if they're gay, lesbian, or transgender. And not everyone answers that question, but I kind of wanted to put in a plug for identityalaska.org is conducting a survey for LGBTQA+ people, you know, people who identify in an other sexuality besides being straight. They're talking about the kinds of opportunities for improvement within our healthcare systems for those of us who identify as LGBTQA+. So be sure to take a look at that. The website, again, is identityalaska.org. And so the data from 2013 to 2015 also shows that 41.1% of Alaska Native people grow up with a household member with substance misuse, compared to the 29.7% of all Alaskans. So out of all of Alaska, you know, Alaska Native people do grow up, you know, seeing someone who misuses the substance, which is a very sad number. And so the same data set shows that 28.4% of Alaska Natives have an adverse childhood experience, or ACEs, of four or more, compared to the 19.5% of all Alaskans. So again, that's a very high, very sad number. And we, our former Lieutenant Governor Valerie Davidson talks about ACEs, the adverse childhood experiences. And, you know, sadly, a lot of us Natives can relate to a lot of these statistics, these negative statistics. And then from the Alaska Bureau of Vital Statistics, they showed that alcohol-induced mortality rate of per 100,000 people is 71.4 for Alaska Natives. So out of 100,000 people, there's 71.4 Alaska Natives, compared to the 22.7 of all Alaskans, and then 8.5 for the national average. So Alaska in general leads, you know, the nation in that number. And then out of all that number for the state, Alaska Natives make up over half of that, 71.4% of that. So that's my bit on the statistics that we were able to, and thanks to Recover Alaska for providing those statistics.
You know, Nikolai, I really appreciate a couple of things that you touched on. And one is that this is not simply that we need to stop drinking. This is a whole body, whole health issue. It's a whole family issue. It's a whole community issue. It's a whole statewide issue. And until we stop putting this in a box, that says this is different than all these other issues, we're going to continue to struggle. It's really interesting, because when you think about recovery, you know, Nikolai and I's experience, I would say I was the person who came in, and what I represent is somebody who can teach recovery versus embodying recovering. And Nikolai is someone who has been able to embody recovery, and I saw this own journey from my own mom. Both my parents were alcoholic, but it's been one of the most powerful and probably most important work that I've ever done, because again, I have just seen such a clear example of how this is just one example of how we all have a hero's journey. And a part of that journey is being able to overcome our dragons. And again, as people, a part of recovery is just learning how to cope with life. And the fact that recovery has so much shame connected to it, mental health is also really stigmatized. And when you look at chronic disease of any kind, it is not just medical. It is mental health. It is emotional health, it is spiritual health, and it's the same with substance use disorders. And so until we start looking at wellness as something that's not fragmented into, you know, being medical or mental, we're going to be missing the mark. And there's a lot of movement towards integrated health, which again really looks at how do we treat the human being. The very cool thing that's going on right now is that there's a ton of research that is looking at even the neuropsychology of addiction and how there are different practices and different interventions that are coming on board, interventions that have come from actually really traditional ways of being that the elders even understood. that are coming up as being highly effective. And what they see is with the healing brain and with the recovered brain is that you can change structures in the brain that actually reinforce our ability to stay in a well place. And it's not just, again, with substance use disorder. It has to do with a lot of stress, amplified conditions that again, depression is now the highest in the Center for Disease, highest cause of death, you know, and it beats out heart disease. So when you look at recovery, there's all these factors and all these elements of it, including genetic, that makes it very complex. But again, we're seeing some really cool things around recovery, and it doesn't have to do with willpower. That's another, I think, misnomer, this idea, I wish I were stronger if I had the willpower to recover. And again, that reinforces this sense of shame,
yeah.
You know? And so, you know, there are these pivotal events in our moments, in our life, in our journey that allow us to move forward in our life towards being our best self. And I'm curious for you, Nikolai, what would you describe some of those pivotal moments as?
So when leading up to the day that I checked into AHC, which everyone, PATC is no longer PATC, it's the Ayurvedic Healing Center, AHC. People still refer to it as PATC, but I just wanted to get that out there to make sure that there was no confusion around that. I wanted to clarify that. So some of the things that I experienced in the throes of the alcoholism, you know, in the throes of this sickness, was I found that there was no way that I could use the substance in a safe manner. It was all or nothing. Like, I got to the point where I would begin drinking and I couldn't stop for days. And I would begin drinking and then I would wake up at what I thought was the next day, but it's 2 days later, not having any recollection of the middle day. So, I was basically just killing myself. And I couldn't understand why, I couldn't stop. I knew that something was wrong. I knew that, you know, the fact that I was, jobless and, you know, all these negative things. I don't have custody of my children. I have two children. And so there were all of these things that were compounded, that were just in my face and I didn't know how to deal with them. And so I chose to drink to try to forget about them, because it gave me a false sense of security, I guess it is. It was something that I thought I could control, but in reality, I can't control it. And so a lot of people think, when you think about an alcoholic, you know, someone who has this disease of alcohol misuse disorder, that you think about someone who is homeless and jobless and all of these negative factors, but a lot of times people who have the misuse disorder have jobs, they have multiple vehicles, there's on the outward appearance they appear to be very successful, but the truth is that when you've got this disease. When I had this disease, once I started drinking, it set off a chain of events. Like the Big Book describes this as an allergic reaction, and that's the best way that's one of the ways that helped me to understand those concepts. That helped me to understand this disease was that when I take a drink of alcohol, it sets off this chain of events within my body that is an allergic reaction, much like when people get hives or you get a runny nose, you start sneezing. In my body, when alcohol enters, it sets off this chain of events that makes me want more and more and more, and it's not normal. With normal drinkers, that chain of events doesn't happen. It's the body of a of a normal drinker very much recognizes that this is a poison. This is something that's not good for the body. So the way that someone who doesn't have the disease can walk away from half a glass of wine, or, you know, take a couple sips of beer and then be like, okay, I'm fine. And you could dump it down the drain without thinking any second thought of it. For me, I had to finish that.
Yeah.
And how dare someone, you know, waste that substance. And so there's this emotional connection to the substance. And so being able to recognize that aspect of it, and then being able to recognize that no one else could become healthy for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that I had to do for myself with the help of other people. Being able to be open enough to accept help from other people, that was a really hard thing, because that meant that I had to peel back all those different layers. I had to work through recognizing and putting out and this was for me. This was my experience. It's different for everyone else. But, you know, I had to recognize and to put out all of those insecurities, all of those things that I thought made me unworthy to be in this life. And so, you know, that included coming out to, like, my sister about my sexuality. You know, that was a big step. And so talking about being able to feel safe to talk about how I feel and who I love and how, you know, all of these things that regular normal people feel that they feel nervous talking about, but it's even more so for a lot of us that have that stigma that surrounds this this way of being. You know, I don't want to name it any other way, but
right.
It's just humanity.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and so we want to talk, you know, bring all of these different issues up front and be able to talk about them in a healthy way. And so I checked into AHC, and once, you know, I got through all of the withdrawal symptoms, you know, the shakes and the sweats and the sleeplessness and restlessness, because I suffered from a lot of anxiety and depression, and I was trying to medicate with alcohol, and it was not a healthy thing at all. And so once my mind cleared, I sat down and I wrote this letter to myself that I refer back to quite often in telling my story, and I refer back to it, you know, physically, and read it once in a while when I'm going through some hard times. But I sat down and I told myself, I got to tell myself exactly how I feel right now and write about the kind of life that I want to have, the kind of life that I want to work towards. And it blows my mind how, when I read it now, how unwell I was, how very distraught and very hopeless I was feeling at that moment. And so this vision of my life that I had seemed so far away. You know, I wanted to be someone that had integrity, someone who was genuinely happy and genuinely fulfilled. I wanted all those things because I felt like there was an emptiness inside of me. And so some of the practices that you helped me, I want you to talk about some of those things that that you helped me work through while I was in treatment. So,
well, it's interesting because a couple of things, again, that you brought up, which I think are so powerful, is that you started recognizing your body's reaction to alcohol, that you were actually having a reaction that you didn't choose to have, and not everybody has. And so I imagine that there was some relief in recognizing that this wasn't, Nikolai's not strong enough to manage his alcohol, right?
Yeah.
That this was a body response. And again, we tend to villainize people as opposed to recognizing it for what it is. And so shame is, talk about layers, you know, there's so much potential for shame with people who are locked in to this feeling of somehow being the alcoholic, you know? And so that starting to journey back away from this place of shame, you know, allowing yourself to show yourself and talking about things like integrity, which is who you are. It's not, it's already in there. And that you had a choice, that's the other thing. And I wonder if there was a point where you didn't realize you had a choice. And then
oh, God. So, and yeah, I wanted to bring this up.
Yeah.
Brené Brown, who studies shame.
Yes.
This is her take on the word shame. She describes it as the intensely painful feeling that we are unworthy of love and belonging. And so the way that, you know, she describes this feeling is that it thrives with secrecy, silence, and judgment.
Yeah.
And then the only way that it's healed is through empathy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I read that, I had to save it on my phone, which is what I just read it off of. And so, you know, I refer back to that. And
yeah.
So I wanted to plug that in while yeah. you're talking.
Yeah, well, and again, just having you read it, I mean, it almost brings tears to my eyes, because to know that there are human beings that are locked in that place, it's heartbreaking. And her work around shame has been so just illuminating to so many people. And again, this choice piece for you. When did you realize you had a choice?
Well, I think that there was a gradual, mm-hmm. It was a gradual awakening to that fact. And one of them, I could remember when we were sitting in the room and you were introducing mindfulness practices to us. And this was something that I had to tell myself, I'm going to be open to this. I'm going to trust this.
Yeah.
I'm going to trust you, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
To take us on this journey, because I didn't know what was on the other end of that, because I was going through anxiety and I was having anxiety episodes. Mm-hmm. And so when you asked us to, you know, close our eyes and then pay attention to our breathing, for me, that was kind of a traumatic experience because of the number of panic attacks I had, you know, going through withdrawals from alcohol. And so that was my body's initial reaction. And then when you said during these sessions, you said, just look at how you feel and then don't judge it. Be curious about it. And I was like, whoa. What did you say? You know, don't judge it. Don't judge how you feel right now. Because up to that point, I was so used to judging myself and, you know, bringing myself down. And, you know, I felt like I didn't deserve anything good.
Yeah.
That's how sick I was.
Yeah.
And so once I realized that this fact that I do deserve everything good in life, and I want to work towards feeling like I deserve.
Yeah.
I want to genuinely feel like I deserve good things.
Yeah.
That I am worthy. I want to feel that. And so, and my natural response to that, even now, like I'll have a twinge of fear when something good happens.
Yeah.
It's not gonna last. You know, that little voice. And we talk about
that's
this.
That's a real thing?
Yeah, and we talk about this. And I thought, initially I thought, what's wrong with me? But then when we were talking about these processes that happen naturally, now that I say that, when I go for my runs, I listen to the Calm app, and we'll talk about these resources later. LeBron James has a series of talks that he does on this, on the Calm app. And it's been amazing to me because I listen to it when I go for my runs and my walks, because he's such an amazing athlete, and I didn't know that there was a layer of this mindful person. And so he talks about some of these thoughts that come in your mind, and he says it's natural, but it's not always helpful.
Yeah.
So I wanted, you know, and I heard your talk about some of these systems within our bodies that are natural, but they're not always helpful. And I know you'll get to that later. So
yeah.
I wanted to put in a plug for that. Being in these rooms in that safe environment in AHC, with that structure, and that just the opportunity to be able to focus on myself,
yeah.
and how I could become healthier, mm-hmm. I can't imagine a better way for me to get healthy. I can remember my family coming to visit me, after a couple weeks of being in AHC, and them saying, "Oh, wow, you put on some weight."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Well, I'm not sick anymore. Like, I can actually eat now. I can actually enjoy food." Because before, I was just hungover and I just didn't have an appetite.
Yeah.
And I just looked emaciated. It was horrible. And so I'm just so thankful. I'll always be thankful that we have places like this that can help us. And it's right here in Bethel. It's right here at home. And they incorporate a lot of culturally relevant mm-hmm. practices. A lot of people come in from the community and they talk about how to live a healthy life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where it comes back to. This is not just a what I put in my mouth or what I use to cope with type of shift. This is a return to wellness. So health is connected to the word healing. And I love that Healing Center is a part of the residential name, because truly healing begins the moment, even before you walk through the doors, the moment you make the decision to walk in. And healing is a process, and it is a practice. And so these are things that as Nikolai talked about, he started being able to practice every day. And the beautiful thing about the practice is it's like exercise. You continue to sustain wellness as long as you continue to exercise. What we practice grows stronger. And so, again, what is so fascinating and amazing about our brain, which, again, we're just scratching the surface of all the research that's going into it, is that in as little as 8 weeks, you not only start changing your state of being, so even, Nikolai, you brought up a good point about how even focusing on your breath can be triggering. So mindfulness really is about awareness. It's practicing awareness. And it's an awareness that leads to choice. And so part of what we offer, and I just want to throw out a huge, a bit of appreciation for the chemical dependency counselors who are in Bethel. Some of the most powerful people I met were during my time as a clinician at the Healing Center, and I learned so much from these individuals, and they are some of the most powerful resources here, most of them having been raised in this area or around this area and having a personal journey story of recovery themselves, many of them. And so, Ray Watson is a huge resource mm-hmm. for this community, and he has done a ton on behalf of recovery. But again, this 6 weeks is a beginning, and it's an opportunity to start practicing these skills as a way to re-inhabit your life, right? So you're re-inhabiting your body. You're re-inhabiting your relationships. You're re-inhabiting your culture. And through re-inhabiting these things, you become a resource yourself. Once you can be a resource to yourself personally, your ability to be a resource to your community becomes a part of your purpose. Just in the example that you lead. And again, this really aligns with values like integrity, which you were talking about, Nikolai. And part of the disease of substance use addiction is we fall out of line with our values. And that's, again, where a lot of the shame comes from, is that we believe that we're not people of integrity. But the fact that it's so painful to believe it is proof that integrity is something that's within us. And so, yeah. Right?
And that's one of the things that you told me.
Yeah.
You said, it's there. You have it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow. You know, and yeah. I remember a talk that we had about who is someone that you look up to, and what are those qualities that draw you to that person. And so I remember us talking about, you know, my uppa, my dad's dad, who was this amazingly, I remember him being just a physically towering presence. He was a broad shoulder, just he seemed like a giant to me, but he was so gentle. He was always humming. And so those are some of the things that I remember about him. But I remember, you know, talking about the way that he was gentle, the way that he was reliable and dependable, respectable, and just and loving. And so and then you said to me, those are things, you know, why you're able to recognize those things is because you already possess them. And so, you know, that kind of, there was another mind-blowing moment for me too. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the traditional practices. In my research with the Yupik culture, because I love the way that you said we're re-inhabiting, we're coming back home to ourselves.
Yeah.
And so the more that I learn about mindfulness exercises and processes, and how many conversations do we have about this being a process and me wanting to get to the end line, like, right away, and not having that appreciation, that ability to be in the moment and mm-hmm. appreciate what's going on, what's happening, instead of focusing on the end.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that I had to work on
yeah.
every single day. And so some of the cool things about the Yupik culture that I like to say is that we're experts of creating spaces.
Yeah.
We are experts at that. You know, that's something that that Esther Green talks about and Mary Beaver. And these are wealth of knowledge. You mm-hmm. know, they're huge wealth of knowledge. And they're here in Bethel. And there are so many elders within this area that are listening right now. And thank you for the work that you do. In the Yupik culture, we're experts at grounding practices, because within our culture, you know, we sit down and we burn the ayuk leaves, the wild tea, mm-hmm. and that helps to engage our senses. And we do a ritual cleansing of our bodies and the atmosphere. And we have this holistic concept of the qazgiq, you know, it's a circle. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that in some of my research is the elders were always so good about putting us at ease. When they were going to talk to us, they said, number one, we're telling you this because we love you. This is coming from a good place. It's not coming from a place where we're patronizing you. We're talking down at you. We're level with you, and we're holding you up because we love you so much. And so that is one layer of mindfulness practice. Mm-hmm. And then they would say, we're going to be telling you this, but you're going to forget it. But later on in life, it's going to come back to you. So that eases you from the pressure of trying to retain all the information. Oh, I gotta remember all this stuff right now. But they put you at ease, saying you'll remember when the time comes. It'll come back to you.
Yeah.
So then the wisdom behind that is just amazing to me. You know, they just have that wisdom. And so they create this space outside of us, but more importantly, they create this space inside of us where, okay, now we're ready. Now you're ready to become the physical the physical space to fill all this wisdom, this knowledge, this love with. And so, I mean, it's just beautiful. And so I wanted to tie that in with some of your knowledge of the practices of mindfulness from a different culture. So this, I think,
right.
we should introduce
yeah.
some of those principles which are already in
Yupik culture. Oh, my gosh, yeah. The more that I've learned about traditional teachings, I mean, it's been mind-blowing to me. And a really good example of that is the work that has been done through Jolly Jolik. And mm-hmm. again, just so much of it really comes back to understanding ourselves through awareness of the moment. Like you said, Nikolai, it will come to you when you need it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our bodies have so much wisdom, and part of mindfulness, again, is being aware of what is going on at any given moment. And then being able, instead of reacting, which so much dysfunction, again, whether it's physical or mental or emotional, has to do with reaction. It has to do with a fear-based response. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to deal with this stress. I want to cling on to this happiness. And so we react by putting substances or doing things to ourselves that end up being really toxic. And again, it could be we jump into another relationship because, you know, we don't like the way we feel in our own bodies. So learning to befriend our bodies, to trust our bodies, to trust our intuitive instincts. Our mind is amazing. But this is another reference to elder wisdom. They talk about how the mind can be the most amazing thing and it can be the most dangerous thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And again, just recognizing, starting to step back from the thinking just long enough to say, is what I'm thinking true?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I love that. I love that fact, you know, that question that you asked. Don't judge it, but is it true?
Yes. Can I be curious with this thought?
Yeah.
And again, like with the criticism piece, and you talking about how Yupik culture comes from a place of love, so much of this teaching is led with love. I love that. The fact is that children in healthy circumstances are taught to engage themselves with love, but in dysfunction along the way, we can be so self-critical. And again, that's where so much suffering comes from. And so as we start healing, as we start on and through our journey of recovery, whatever it is that we're, whatever dragons we're facing, we have to create a space. And really, this is mindfulness. And I love how you talked a bit about, you know, again, traditional culture creates a safe space. So safe space really is recognizing that this moment right now is the only moment we can make decisions in. So when we are triggered to react, we have to find a way to slow the response down. And just and it's a super simple example because I know we're filling up this hour super quickly. a super simple example is the acronym STOP. So stop, take a breath. Just by breathing in and breathing out slowly, you start slowing down your physiological response. Observe. What am I feeling? What am I thinking? What am I believing right now, and is it true? And then choose how to proceed. And the choice is your freedom and your power. Viktor Frankl, who was a Holocaust survivor and wrote Man's Search for Meaning, considered one of the most important books ever written, top 100 by the Congressional Library. That is what one of the statements he's known for, that the one freedom that nobody can take away from us is our ability to choose. And every moment gives us another opportunity to choose. So mindfulness really is that. And you know, we are going to run out of time, Nikolai, but I want to say we have a lot of resources that we've sent to the radio station to have on their website that has to do with recovery apps, that has to do with mindfulness apps, resources here in Bethel.
Yeah,
there's
and that's
time.
A big thing, yeah. And then, you know, with YKHC, there's resources in all the villages too that have behavioral health aides. And these are people that care enough that they take the time from their own lives, and they learn about how to help other people and to help guide other people to the resources that they need, whether it be within the community through telehealth, telemedicine, or AHC, residential treatment, whatever it may be. The resources are out there. But I kind of wanted to touch on something that, a lot of times we forget to mention is the families that have to live in these circumstances. There's so many times where family feels like there's no help for them. You know, there's all these resources for people that have the misuse, you know, that have the addictions, but what's out here for the families? And we can touch a little bit on codependency. I think that's a really good thing, and I'll leave you to talk about that, and I could, you know, fill it in with some of my experiences with codependency.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because, again, like I was saying before, substance use disorder or any chronic health condition is never just about the person. You know, we are a part of this network of human beings, and what we do impacts others. And obviously the people that we're closest to have the highest impact. And so, you know, Al-Anon is a very well-recognized resource. Some of the resources that I would refer to, all of these places would have resources for families. And so I know the Covenant Church offers Celebrate Recovery. I know some of this stuff right now is on hold as far as groups since the pandemic, but their websites are all on, will be offered up on the website for the radio station. And the one number I would say you could call, we can give you all sorts of resources, is Bethel Family Clinic, and talk to our case manager. Dennis Raines is just a huge...
Dennis is awesome.
Yeah, huge resource. And he has just endless resources when it comes to recovery. He's our chemical dependency counselor, and he has been working in this field for years and years. The phone number, if you wanted to connect and have some information, 907-545-5210, and you'll connect with our case manager. But, yeah, Bethel Family Clinic has groups that Dennis also offers a couple times a week. Those have been on hold, but we're hoping to get those back online real soon. There's tons of meetings online.
Yeah. Yeah, and then AA Alaska has a statewide telephonic meeting is available. So you can dial in from anywhere on Sundays, Mondays, and Thursdays from 5:30 to 6:30. And you can join the conversation by calling 515-604-9546. And the access code is 35033. And don't worry about, you know, writing these numbers down or remembering them right now. They're going to all be available on KYUK's website, kyuk.org. And then you find the Wellness Wednesdays page. And so that's where we're going to have all of this information available. And another very good resource is recoveralaska.org. And in the way that I came to work with Recover Alaska was I saw this ad on social media where they asked for people's recovery stories. And so I was like, hey, that's cool. You know, I get to share my experience. And so I wrote, you know, the story of how I became well. And so, you know, they called me a couple weeks later and they said, hey, we want you to come to Anchorage and we want you to tell this story. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. You know, because there were so many different, layers on, and I've been talking about layers so much today. but I had to, condense my story down to 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And to be able to do that, it was amazing because they hooked me up with a coach, Colby, who's from the one of the theaters in Anchorage, mm-hmm. and just a very charismatic person. Which, you know, she helped coach me to talk more about the recovery process versus being so heavy on the story when you're in the throes of the disease.
Right.
Because everyone knows those stories.
Yep.
Either live them or you see it from the outside. So,
yep.
You know, we want to focus on the recovery process. So I thought that was an amazing concept. And anyway, you could see my story. They have, Recover Alaska has a YouTube page. And one of the videos on there is my story. And then there's a number of different stories from all kinds of people throughout the state of Alaska, natives, non-natives, you know, people that come from big communities to small mm-hmm. communities. And it's just a very good balance. And that they do this so strategically. And I love that, you know, mm-hmm. that they're putting out all this information using real examples, so that it, you know, it makes a bigger impact. We're going to talk about a little bit with apps, but all of these, like we said, are going to be available. One of the ones is Sober Grid. It's a sober community on your phone with easy to access resources for tracking and sharing progress and giving and receiving, support. And it's, 24/7 live peer coaching. And so one of the things, and I'm not familiar with this one, is the temper. And one of the reading materials that they have is 17 ways to stay sober mm-hmm. when you're stuck at home. And another one is 11 online recovery meetings and groups you'll want to check out. So there's all kinds of resources for us right now. You know, now that spring has sprung here in the Bethel area, everyone's going to be busy outside, you know, getting ready for salmon runs and picking berries. And I'm excited. My kids are going to be with me for 8 weeks.
Awesome.
Yeah, we always have a good time. So, you know, when I was becoming well, I was kind of worrying about how am I going to stay sober for the rest of my life. It was so overwhelming for me. Like I'm not going to drink forever. Like,
yeah.
And that was a concept that I couldn't wrap my head around. But from the day that I got out of treatment, which was on my son's birthday, mm-hmm. At the end of March, I hit the ground running. There was so much to do. It was so much to do. And you know, one of the things that I wanted to do was to make sure that, I share this message of hope,
yeah.
Because that's part of my recovery process.
Yeah.
It, you know, it helps to validate me. It helps when it helps me when I'm able to hear those, people say, oh, I kind of have a similar story like you.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of, starts a recovery process
yeah.
in someone else. And so that's a very powerful tool. And I'm really glad to be able to share this time with you, and to be able to share you with other people. I'm always so happy to mention you and the amazing opportunity you created within my life to mm-hmm. start that process of recovery.
Well, I'm such a humble part of your story, honestly, Nikolai, and I just want to sort of finish off by saying that you naturally, again, embody and promote a healthy and a recovered lifestyle. Some of the things you talked about, obviously the online resources, staying engaged in therapy or groups, having a schedule or routine. The minute you got out, you had purpose. You had things that you had to do. And even your purpose in the arena of recovery has been such a fulfilling role for you. And purpose and service can be so powerful when it comes to getting your life back. And so this service that you provide by being willing to tell your story, having the courage, you know, to have a voice, because that can be scary. And so I just so much appreciate that about you. And again, just continuing to pay attention to this moment right now, paying attention to you and recognizing everybody's worthiness to have the best life they possibly can. And again, I think that the work that you do to promote that is just, it's beautiful, Nikolai, and I just so appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you, and thanks to everyone for listening to us today. And if you missed any part of this, KYUK is always very good at posting these recordings online. So once again, their website is kyuk.org, and you could find the Wellness Wednesdays. And thank you so much. Have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, enjoy the weather.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to Wellness Wednesday on KYUK, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m.